हरिः ॐ सहनाववतु सहनाभुनक्तु सहवीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्णचैतन्यप्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवत्सरि गौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Chaitanya Upanayanam, Nyaya Sutras, page 17. So of the 10 kinds of evidence, yes, Praman, yes. Number 8, Sambhava, inclusion. Sambhava is the Pramana based on common experience that a large quantity includes a smaller quantity. For example, if we know someone has $100, we automatically know he has $1, $5, $10, and so on. Yeah, so everything is it's included. If you have that bigger thing, then the smaller ones are already there. So it's a natural evidence, you know. The Prabhupada will use that, but it's part of the bigger.
So Prabhupada knows the spiritual reality, he must know the material reality. So his social teachings must be absolute.
Yes. Yes, because if the one includes the other, you know. Or he said if bhakti is, you know, Rupa Goswami's kicked out bhakti, which is the highest of the yogas, I mean if kept bhakti and kicked out jnana, it automatically means you've kicked out karma.
Yeah, that's also kayuta.
Okay. Yeah, it would be that same kind of thing. You said the bigger, if you have already caught the bigger one, the smaller one, that's included within it is included. So you can see is these are used, but they're not on their own. They have to be in context of the other, of the main three, and of those it has to be in shastra. So in other words, any of these 10 used in the context of shastra will have a value. But generally, it'd be these other than the first three. The other 7 will be used in context of the other three, and then those will be used in support of shastra. Right. So that means the shastra will be the primary, and then pratyaksha and anuman will be the secondary, and then these other 7 will be the tertiary. Like that. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. 9. Aitihya, tradition. Aitihya means well-known traditional sayings with an unknown source. This pramana is applied when some common knowledge or fact is received from a tradition started by an unknown speaker. For instance, there's a yaksha living in that banyan tree, or the Pandavas built the old fort in New Delhi. Just no one really knows, but you know, it's come down. So there's so many things like that. So generally we'll use that thing as when you're establishing what to do, you look at the tradition and all that and see what's the context of what you're doing like that. Or you can also use it in the context of drishtanta, of trying to establish. You're giving an example and all that, and then, you know, once you've made the example, if someone hasn't quite caught, you can use some traditional saying like that, and then people catch. You know what I'm saying? So it'll be in support of in that case, then the Udaharana. Yeah, and then the inclusion will be, I guess, in similarity, right? That aspect. You know, the one before, what was that one? The number 4. Comparison. You know, so that's a comparison the other way. That if this is there automatically. 10. Cheshta, gesture. Cheshta is the praman which comes into play when one learns something from the knowledge of a person's gestures or from symbols. For instance, the pujari may show the deity certain movements to convey certain messages. You know, or if an Italian goes like this, then you know, okay, nothing's going to happen. You infer from gestures. Yes, something is.
Or in the action movies, when the special forces send to someone, they do that.
Yeah, then you know that they're doing something. Yeah, something's happening. You know, our facial expressions are. Having defined these, this is used a lot also. Somebody does something and then you interpret what they do. You know, like that. So, yeah. Having defined these 10 pramanas, Baladeva Vidyabhushana, in his commentary to Laghu Bhagavatamrita 1.7, explains the various darshanas, recognition of these different sources of knowledge. He uses 8 out of 10. So the philosophical school, and then what they accept. So lokayata, charvak means, you know, it's just atheistic like that, then they just use pratyaksha. They can see it, it exists. Same with the Buddhists. You know, they can see it, it exists. And the dog, you know, you talk so many things, but when the food comes in front of them, it exists. Otherwise, it's just talk. Vaisheshika. Then Pratyaksha and Anuman, Shankya and Patanjali, then Pratyaksha, Anuman and Shabda, Nyaya, Pratyaksha, Anuman, Shabda, Upamana, then Karma Mimamsa, then Pratyaksha, Anuman, Shabda, Anuman, Artapada and Abhava, and Vedanta, Puranikas, Pratyaksha, Anuman, Shabda, Upamana, Artapati, Abhava, Shambhava, and Aitihya. Right, so they don't put much into gestures. Like, I can remember spending with one person, I don't know, it was quite a few sittings. Quite a few sittings, and each sitting would be quite long, trying to convince them that that other person wasn't giving gestures that they wanted to marry them.
It's hard to convince.
Yeah, it means they went to Jagannath, you know, the Jagannath Abhishek, you know, and this person showed up and he was taking pictures. He had a camera and he was taking pictures. And so many of the pictures were, you know, he was right, you know, next to Jagannath taking pictures and the devotees, and when that person came up to offer the Abhishek, they were taking pictures of them, so therefore, then, you know, why would they be there? You know, I went there, why would they be there, and why would they be taking pictures of me unless they wanted to marry me? Not that he's a Kanjari, he's taking pictures of the deities and everybody takes. He also took pictures of most everybody else that also, you know, came for like this and that. And he was there because it was Jagannath, you know, to the Abhishek, not because he wanted to see this person. So, yeah, that's why. Gestures, you see, aren't taken as a very main. You know, you could use that as a supportive, but you wouldn't take it as the pramana. You know, yes. Okay, so now I know where this one comes from. It comes from the three main pramanas. Followers of the Vedanta school of philosophy founded by Bhadarayana Vedavyas, including both Vaishnavas and Advaitavadis, accept all 10 types of pramana as valid. However, acharyas like Sri Madhva assert that only 3 of these stand as independent means of knowledge: Pratyaksha, Anuman, and Shabda. The remaining 7 pramanas are merely special applications of the main 3. The 10 means of knowing can thus be categorized as follows: the 3 independent pramanas and their constituents. 1. Pratyaksha, so Upamana, Aitihya, Abhava, and Cheshta, because these are all things you see. Right? Anuman, Artapati, Sambhava, and Shabda, Upamana, and Arsha. So in that way, then all 10 fall into their place. Srila Jiva Goswami in his Sri Bhagavat Sandarbha aims at the highest kind of knowledge, obtainable, realization of the absolute truth. Thus, Srila Jiva Goswami is concerned with establishing an infallible means of acquiring knowledge. Jiva Goswami asserts that for this lofty purpose, all pramanas are unreliable in the hands of imperfect humans. And, quote, an ordinary person is tainted by four faults. His faculties are faulty, end quote. Tattvasandarbha 9. So that means, right there, if you put it that in, then you start to have that, now these things with pratyaksha are going to have a weakness. And because, you know, the cheating and this and that, then the anuman is going to have. So therefore, the only reliable source is shabda. Does that make sense? Except for aparosheya shabda pramana, the Vedic scriptures, all proofs are limited to investigating objects of this world and are unable to reveal the nature of the spiritual world. Therefore, these proofs are subject to the faults of the observer. Ordinary human beings use various means to acquire knowledge, but none of them are infallible. This fallibility is due to the four inherent defects found in all conditioned living beings. Yeah. So then, because you add that into it, since if you're looking at other things, then people are quite happy at the material on working with these all, because they themselves are imperfect and they have an imperfect motive. Right? And they'll use imperfect means, and then they'll take that against everybody else. So then it works. They just argue with each other, like it said before. You know, and they said, everybody, love the cancer, all these great jnanis, they all argue with each other with no real purpose, you know, just to win and prove themselves and this and that. Therefore, then these become, he's saying, if we got the absolute, then it's got to be shabda. And of shabda, it's got to be aparusheya. So it's got to be beyond what's here. So therefore, it only leaves the shastra. You know, and then again, of Shastra, then it will be Bhagavatam. So, you know, so it just keeps going back. And so then we can see is that there's a pattern here. It's a pattern developed. That it's always going to be about this transcendental, and then everything below that has its value in its connection with that. So the conclusions of the Bhagavatam, according to the Acharyas, that's what's going to be. The four defects of perceptive judgment. One, Brahma, illusion or mistaken identification. Brahma is of two kinds. The first is identification of the body as the self. Everyone is born into this delusion. But how completely we identify with our body depends on our attachment to it. Because of this defect, we mistake the temporary, miserable sense objects as permanent sources of pleasure. The second kind of delusion occurs when we think we perceive something that, in fact, is not present. As in the case of a mirage, hallucination, when one sees a tree at dusk and thinks it's a man. So just the being born, we're born into that, and then how much we identify is how much we're in that illusion. And then the other is mistaking one thing for another. Yes?
Originally, this is Tattva Brahma and Ananda Brahma.
Oh. Tattva Brahma and Ananda Brahma.
The first one is Ananda and the second one is Tattva.
Oh, okay. Because I also, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, one point mentions about Vaikuntha Brahma. Because you think it's eternal. So it's the same kind of principle as the one in the Sambandha of who you are and then where you'll get happiness from. Then once you in that illusion, then you make your plans what you're going to do to it. Pramana, a second, committing mistakes. Pramada is our tendency to make mistakes due to inattention. For example, we may sit through a lecture but miss portions of it because our mind is wandering. Because of this defect, we tend to make mistakes. But all of you would never have that. Never.
I just read yesterday, in Jitashin, to meet the Shri Prabhupada, we find this illusion as mistaken knowledge because of inattention while listening. This is illusion, and when you speak up this knowledge, this is cheating.
Oh, that's interesting. So you commit mistake in the first place, but when you work on that, that's cheating. Oh, okay. That's interesting. That's nice. Viparlipsa, cheating propensity. Deeper lips is the desire to deceive others. By our identification with the material body, we seek happiness through gratification of the senses. When this fails, we take to cheating to improve our chances. Friends cheat, politicians cheat the public, and so on. This cheating propensity manifests on all levels of material existence. That's a very nice thing, that quote. Where is that?
It's chapter.
Yeah, because you put that into, you know, about this this pramada. It means at the end of that, put that, and then it naturally goes into then the people with sins.
I think there he describes all of those in one paragraph.
Okay. Oh, okay. Nice, nice. Or you can put it afterwards. Got karana patava, imperfect senses. Karana patava is weakness of the senses. As when a person, even with focused mind, is unable to discern some object. We have five perceptive senses: the eyes, ears, tongue, nose, and skin. These senses function only within a limited range. The human eye, for example, can see light between infrared and ultraviolet wavelengths. There are many other wavelengths the eye cannot discern: radio waves, X-rays, and so on. That'd be weird if you could see everything. You wouldn't be able to see anything, right? To see all these rays everywhere.
To see people's thoughts.
Even within the visible spectrum, our eyes cannot see clearly. If the light is too bright or too dim, the object's too far or too close, or if the eyes themselves are diseased, upon analysis, each sense is subject to similar limitations. Srila Jiva Goswami concludes that since these four defects makes perfectly reliable knowledge about material objects a rare achievement, perfect knowledge about the realm beyond our sensory inspection is altogether impossible. Because of these natural faults, no mortal can be perfectly reasonable on his own strength, no matter how diligently he tries. So this is the premise that you start with. He's establishing Praman in the Tattvasandarbha. So then he's just pointing, you can't buy anything else other than accepting the absolute as coming down from Krishna. You can't get it. And so therefore then, any other approach. So unless you use that and then apply that below that, only you can't say you'll take other bodies of knowledge and from that I will gain, because these four things apply. So unless it's constantly being connected to the absolute, you know, from the acharyas, then how can you say that these four aren't functioning? You know, so it becomes a very important point. I mean, we just generally take it very comfortably that people are going to get, you know, pointed about the things that, and try to use these things with, impunity would be the word, you know, against the acharya's direction, then it's just going to create trouble. Yes?
It's interesting that there is one famous philosopher, one of the first modern philosophers, Francis Bacon, and his thing was that he was trying to discern what is real knowledge. And he explains that there are four obstacles to get real knowledge. And when you read them, they're very similar to these ones.
So the least part.
Yes, and he says, he calls them idols. So they were, what I'm remembering. There was the idol of the tribe. If you belong to a certain tribe.
Okay, so that's the first
one. So you view everything according to your tribe, but it's not the real. And then there was the idol of the cage. That's basically your own uniqueness inside the tribe, that is also a problem.
Okay. There are
different levels of false identification.
Okay.
So it's funny that he's obviously...
I mean, if you analyze, then you naturally have to see these kind of things. Because, I mean, that's the thing, is from perception you'll get something. That's why people have so much faith in it. But the problem is then how they'll interpret it is based on the samskaras. That's where the problem comes in. You know, so even if it hasn't already come in with the sense, like he pointed out, how much difficult it is to see the right thing, then on top of that, now how you interpret it, that's going to be the further. And as we see, is that, you know, in the modern context, that interpretation is the authority. because that's where the academics and everybody, the scientists and, you know, politicians, everybody gets their authority is by what they have interpreted from what that has been seen, right? As opposed to what's the absolute reality and what am I seeing? How does it connect with that? Okay, so he's the start of the inductive.
He had the idea that the scholars will be the new priesthood.
The new idols.
Yes.
Around us.
From
nature. Where is this Bacon dude from?
He's British.
British, okay. With a name like Bacon, in fact, that's a
good name.
Well, he's
high-ranking
British. Okay. Who's the guy? A name like Bacon? Oh, probably started that way, then he got knighted, and somebody got...
Duryodhana.
Duryodhana. Oh, yeah, okay. That works, okay. Duryodhana. It seems his name was... Well, no, they were all after Du.
His name was Suyodhana. Then he became...
Duryodhana. But even all the other Dushasana, so many of them that starts with D. Du, you know.
Even
Dhritarashtra. Yeah, okay. By, you know, what were you saying before? Tradition by Aitihya, then you can say about the apple doesn't fall very far from the tree. Okay. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur differentiates between pure and mundane logic and tattva vivek. Mixed with karma, fruit of work, and jnana, philosophical speculation, material logic places a great variety of ideas in human society. Thus, logic brings many material results in this world of birth and death. Text 18. So it's just a matter is, are you coming up with a system for the world of birth and death, or the system for going back to Godhead? Commentary by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Oh, so this is just the commentary on text 18.
Yeah.
Ah, okay, I thought this was summing up that. Okay. Logic, yukti, is of two kinds, pure, shuddha, and mixed, misra. Pure logic is present in the spirit soul in its original pure nature. When the spirit soul is imprisoned in matter and his activities are mixed with material conceptions, then he possesses what I call mixed logic, misra yukti. This mixed logic is of two kinds, mixed with fruit of action, karma misra, and mixed with philosophical speculation, jnana misra. So that means, what is it? So you have karma misra nyaya and jnana misra nyaya. So then some of the karma misra nyaya, or jnana misra nyaya bhakti.
As long as it's bhakti, it's not a problem.
Yeah, or jnana, misra, nyaya, misra, bhakti. That would take more. No? Okay.
It's a lot of ingredients.
Yes. Very complex. Very complex. This mixed logic is also known by the word tarka, material speculation. This mixed logic is very bad. For seen within it are the four defects, brahma, mistakes, pramada, illusions, vipralipsa, cheating, and karanapatava, sensory inefficiency. That's interesting here, sensory inefficiency. Like that. What was it called over here? Imperfect senses, but sensory inefficiency. Sir.
Who is the... There's a yogi who would have kasha or something in his ear, and it was very similar to the Tara.
Yeah, Kartabhaja or Kartabhaja?
Yeah, Kartabhaja.
Kartabhaja.
That's the ones that wear the...
There's somebody wears these big, like conch, like what, bangles, right? Then right through the center of their ear.
Right. Now up here, though.
No, it goes through this part, the inside part.
Yeah.
They go right through here. You know, nobody does that. Only they did that. They always use the edge. Yeah, I mean, it's a new thing. And also in the West, they do it. They don't use the conch. They use a wooden one. A wooden bangle, isn't it?
Yeah, but they actually call that the conch. That particular piercing is called
conch, even though they're putting a piece of wood.
Yeah, it doesn't matter what you put in.
So they don't even know that it used to be conch.
Right. Maybe the person who named it knew. Nobody else knows.
Okay, so he probably went to India and thought, that's cool, and then that'll be even cooler if I use a piece of wood. So. Jai. This the conclusions maintained by this mixed logic are always faulty. Pure logic always arrives at the same conclusion. Mixed logic arrives at a great host of mutually contradictory conclusions. By acting according to the conclusions of mixed logic, the souls in the material world attain the result of being more and more stringently confined in the prison of the material world. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur in this text and other places mentions in the spiritual world there's only one perspective. As Krishna is the supreme absolute truth, we're all the servants, and through bhakti we'll please him in pure devotion. There isn't another view. But in the material world, because they're using this mixed logic, because that's pure logic, they're using mixed and they end up with all these unlimited different things. And he basically documents them for like 26 different categories. They're all overlapping, but you know, individual different things. And then like that, they all contradict each other, so then they fight. You know, you have the skeptic, and you have the idealist, and you know, all these different things, the karma, the jnani, like that. The Gnostics, the agnostic, like this, all these different. So they all contradict each other.
In Bhagavad Gita, Sri Prabhupada, we spoke of describing the kshara and akshara, the perfect and imperfect living beings. There are two types of living beings. There he says that in the spiritual world, all living entities are agreeable with the purpose of creation. This is the characteristic, common characteristic.
Yes. Yes. Yeah, so they have different tastes, that's the difference. But as far as the understanding, it's the same. The taste is different.
So tattva is one, arasas are many.
Yeah. But at the same time, Krishna is rasa, so it's still one. But the living entities, as his expansions, which are non-different, but then they taste different. They're unique, because he's unique, they're unique, so therefore they have different tastes.
So Krishna is rasa and we are rasis. We do a different rasas.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, his rasa and his one as a vishai, but as an ashray,
then there's a, yeah, and there's something. Yes, that is.
Rasik sounds good.
I like this.
By employing the logic that one is born from matter, one cannot go above matter. Material logic speaks only nonsense, text 19. So we say life comes from matter, they can't understand what's beyond matter, because then you came from matter, so how can you say that you can understand anything beyond matter? Commentary by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Mixed logic is born from matter. Looking through the door of the senses, the soul imprisoned in matter catches a glimpse of material images, a glimpse carried by the nerves to the brain. There the images are preserved by the power of memory. It is then that material logic does its work. In this way, many ideas and imaginations are created. Sorting through these material images, material logic arranges them in pretty patterns. That's interesting. Yeah, because you want pretty patterns. This is called science. when you arrange all these images and pretty logically arrange them in pretty patterns, that's called science and philosophy. So it's kind of like the IQ test is how much you can observe pretty patterns.
Yeah.
Okay. How quickly?
It's like kaleidoscope.
Yeah. That's interesting.
It doesn't end here. It goes on and on.
It keeps going.
Smashing.
Looking this way and that at the elute sensory images, logic comes to certain conclusions. This is called reason. Comte says, carefully preserve and organize what you have seen. Examine that information to find the truth. End quote. By examining the images seen by the material senses, logic may understand something of the material world. Why should that logic not be called material logic? However, how can it's called material logic. You can say it's defined here, and so you can't say it's not that. But at the same time, as this next point is, then, however, how can that material logic hope to understand the nature and activities that are beyond the material world? If something indeed exists beyond the material world, then a specific process to understand it must certainly also exist. If, unaware of that spiritual process of obtaining knowledge, and not wishing to understand whether such a process exists, an uneducated barbarian takes shelter of material logic alone, then that person will talk only nonsense. How can there be any doubt of that? Very conclusive, but it's very pleasantly presented. just blunt. Because this was written back when people could, in general in society, speak very nicely. It was valued to speak in a cultured way. Not sure. I think that kind of lasted to some degree. I mean, in a more noble way up until World War I. But then to some degree until after World War II. At that point, in the 50s, that where they threw everything out. You know, the greasers and the punks. And kind of lost something there. Mm-hmm. Only when it is directed towards understanding the workings of the material world does that material logic bring any good results. For engineering, medicine, warfare, music, and other like material activities, mixed logic is very suitable. First is material logic mixed with philosophical speculation, jnana mistra yukti. In this, the theoretical stage, the scientist understands general principles. After that comes the second stage where the theoretical knowledge is applied to solving practical problems. This is called karma misra yukti. For example, in building a railroad, first comes the theoretical stage, jnana misra yukti, and then the stage of application, karma misra yukti, where the railroad is actually built. Engineering and other like activities are the proper sphere of mixed logic. The world beyond matter is not the proper sphere of mixed logic. Mixed logic cannot understand that world. Only spiritual logic can understand the world beyond matter. Materialism, the worship... Materialism, the worship of material nature, the philosophy of the cessation of existence, nirvana, and skepticism takes shelter of material logic to understand the original cause of the material world, cause that is beyond matter. Using material logic for this purpose will never bring a happy result. That is why these philosophies have become the object of laughter. Whatever books these philosophers have written are only nonsense chattering. Tattva Vivek, text 18 and 19. Really good.
So that definition of what is science is based on this mixed logic. That there is a theory, the fundamentals of the axioms, there is a principle, and then it should be experimentally proven. and then it should be accepted by a large, it should be supported by a large amount of data.
Mm.
So that's still a mixed logic, that's an inductive way to approach. Mm. So it can at max be called like a Nyaya, come to the stage of Nyaya Sutras, what they bring. They in fact are starting at a better position because they first say Shastra is, Shabda is, like, you know, the proof on its own. But if you want to understand how it is, then there is an epistemological whole system how to do that. And then when you use this way as what is called science, then at every step then you are blocked by that mix.
The mix aspect, because it's what you perceived and what you saw of it, how you interpret it.
And what I personally saw when most of these scientists who may have a good intent and they, in order to show that you know, spirituality also has relevance, they force, in one sense, they impose something which is actually not how it is.
Mm-hmm.
And then that is subjected to criticism and fault. Then
Okay. In Aitihi it was called giving the dog a bad name and then hanging them.
So they impose for a purpose to prove something spiritual and all, and that doesn't work because it is criticized.
Mm-hmm.
Now their position is whether they have to take, which side they have to take. Either they have to give up all, like, you know, what their identity is resting on, or they have to give up this and then gel in with the ordinary.
Then, I mean, there's a simple, straightforward that was used in the past and very efficiently, you know, by the, I think, the sophists, is that whoever is professing the absolute, then you get rid of them, then you can go on in your rationale and then go. Yeah, it's interesting how it always comes back, the same things, and whoever is there, you can fit into where they go. You know, you show Kante there, and then Shikshamrita, then you show others, and then where they fit in the whole thing.
This next verse starts describing everybody.
All the, oh, okay. Nobody.
He doesn't live higher. Everybody gets there.
Nobody. Everybody gets there. There 15 minutes.
Even actually their definition of knowledge is different from ours, because Srila Prabhupada defines knowledge as absolute knowledge, that doesn't change.
Yeah.
Because they are aware that their knowledge changes, so they change the definition of knowledge. Knowledge is, as you observe, then you make a theory, then you make an experiment, and if nobody is able to prove it for a certain amount of time, then it's knowledge.
But they describe a process and then what's left, but they haven't described the knowledge itself, technically.
When I studied that education, so the only permanent thing about knowledge is it always changes. That's the definition.
And so then you write back and says, and so how long will this this book be valid? Will it still be valid by the time I finish the degree?
And the answer is no. Because,
so then, why should I be learning this? You should just see my sincerity and give the degree. Why run me through all these loops that are a waste of time, right? I could be doing something more practical. Oh, well.
Yeah, Maharaj, I was thinking that in order to be practical or in order to practice something, you need a firm position. And then within that, you need to be flexible. But if everything is changing constantly, there's no firm position in the, how you call it? System of
ideas?
In your system of, how you call it?
Systematic?
No, when you have both.
Yeah, when the, in in your existence, you can say. It doesn't matter. It's a principle thing. Because usually the masculine principle is
fixed.
And then the feminine is constantly adjusting. But then if you have, like Prabhu was mentioning, everything is changing constantly. There's no fixed principle. Mm-hmm. You can't function. It's really crazy. It's like it's very impractical.
Yeah. Well, at some point it'll stagnate because if you have a more kind of, in other words, if you have a stable social environment, you know, a stable, prosperous social environment, then you can afford to speculate like this.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't affect as people live their life, and it goes on no matter what you say. But if that's unstable, then what you're saying has no value to them at all, and they'll look for what's stable. Yes.
In fact, they define education. They say education is a subsection of the society,
right.
So it has to gear according to how society is.
Mm-hmm.
It's not, and it is in one sense like a check and process that it purifies the society, but at the same time it is the subsection within a society.
So it's contradictory. It contradicts itself.
Not in that sense. What they say is, through education you can help the society to upgrade itself, but if something goes against the society norms, then education should not teach them. Like what we teach is, material world is miserable. You have to give it up and go back to God. That's not allowed.
You can't have the knowledge.
Because it is subsection of society.
It's like the Vedic Brahmins are up. Then you have the Kshatriyas. But in the modern context, no. The Brahmins have to be below the Kshatriyas.
Mm.
In fact, ideally, everyone's below the Vaishyas.
Yeah, because it's bourgeois. Conflict.
Yeah, because they control.
And now it's Shudras. In children,
Gretchen.
Now that's the one thing is, and they had Hansel and Gretchen, you know, in the gingerbread house, something like that. But then, would this be considered? You know, Greta. She would not necessarily. She would just be standing up for the, you know, improper behavior of the senior ladies. But you know, for Hansel, then that would be. You know, offense against the women and all that.
Mm.
At the same time, as what about the poor old lady? If someone's eating your house, you know, someone came along and took your door and all that, then would you go on being happy? Of course, she's going to complain. Mm. Mm-hmm. Yes. Philosophy of science.
It was different says that during the last 200 years, in the science, every theory was changed during 1 or 2 years.
Really? Every 2 years?
Almost like fashion.
Yeah, it's like fashion. Yeah,
every 2 years, did it also come back around?
did corduroys come back in fashion, or pleats, or cuffs, or so like that? Then the philosophy. Well, they'll take parts. They'll take something. It'll go out, and then they'll take a part of it and
rearrange.
Yeah, because otherwise, what do they have to deal with? It's only what they can perceive with their senses. 24. Yeah, there's
not a lot.
Should be some innovations in science and education. And when our country,
there should be a division.
Innovation.
Oh, innovation, okay.
And when our country joined the Bologna document of education, we also started to teach children according to the Western system. I see that main plan became that children should not get old knowledge, they should give some new ideas and change something in knowledge which they should study in the university. And after that, after 10 years, I see that students became very weak. Because before they were very stable in some parts of the world, but now they don't know anything, they just know how to argue with the teachers and how to make some new ideas.
Yeah, well, that would be the thing. As soon as the day the teacher pronounces that, then you sit there and everyone sits, but the next day you come early. And then you're there in the teacher's seat, and everybody else is sitting around like that. You change how the desks are and that. That when the teacher walks in, then they say, may we help you? He says, no, sir, so this is innovation. We're teaching the class. We want you to sit in the back, you know, work your way up, you know.
As long as he gets paid,
as long as they get paid, that would probably be fun for them. Yeah.
Your first is somewhere in the back.
And then they go back, and it goes down, and then the next day, then the other kids take over, and then the next thing they come in, and then there's the kids sitting in the principal's, and then like that, and then you stop paying.
When I was 12, like that, we used to, in one sense, harass the teachers with lots of questions. And when one teacher left, then the principal took an opportunity saying that, okay, you are harassing the teachers with your questions, now you teach. She was a teacher. And I was the first one. I was teaching, and then everybody else was asking questions. It went on. It's like, they wanted to prove something they couldn't prove, but I was not like very aggressive in those years. I was just 11 or 12. If it was just after 2 years, it would have been even fun.
Yeah, more fun. Could have taken over the
state. You can even try it. Sometimes it may.
Yeah. It backfires.
Backfires.
And here Maharaj says materialism, the worship of material nature, it seems he means that they are all shaktis.
Yeah, basically. Because it's all about material. Unless you're the absolute truth, then you can't be. Other than monotheism, everybody else is worshipping material nature to some degree or another. They may have a more theistic aspect in that there's governing laws and all that, and so therefore you have to follow that. Like Jaimini would be the top of that, you know. But you worship all the different demigods, or even you want to worship Vishnu, it's fine. You worship somebody, and then you get the. But they're still seeing Vishnu and all the goodness. So it's all material energy. So other than the Vaishnavas, and everybody else technically is Shaktis, whether they know about the personality of Shakti or not, but that's what they worship. You know, pantheists, and, you know, that's what you call it.
Even the impersonalist is all about not accepting Shakti. It's not about
not accepting, but at the same time,
is there whatever? Yeah,
that's the fun. Yeah, that's interesting. They don't accept that is God has a Shakti, but everything's Shakti. And Shakti
is not about Bhagavan. It's not about God. It's about not accepting Shakti.
Yeah.
Well, although they are also Shakti.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
They're all Shakti.
Yeah, just that one thing, and everything works.
And also in personal is that, you know, it's funny to watch them when you travel north, you know, all those places, you know, Rishikesh, Haridwar, you know, and going up there. They're all Shivites, basically.
That's right.
Because they have to accept Shaktiman, being Shakti themselves, but they worship impersonal Shiva. Basically, if you really like really sit and discuss with them, Vishnu they won't accept for some reason. I don't know why. I tried to discuss and argue, but they were just smoking ganja and laughing at me. So there was no point to discuss because they were high. You know.
Was there a rope around also?
Rope.
Smoking dope, skipping rope.
No rope. So it's...
Because in the philosophy of the Shaivism, then the aspect of Linga, Lord Shiva being that impersonal absolute, is very prominent, and that really they can take full shelter of him.
Oh, okay.
Because Shaktas are here, those who worship Devi, And I remember we discussed, you know, the Panchopasana from Brahma Samhita.
Mm-hmm.
And that, so definition of Anamaya is those who worship Shakti in the form of Durga. Then come the Suryas, then Ganapatyas.
Mm-hmm.
Then actually, like you mentioned, the Vishnu, worship of Vishnu,
mm-hmm.
in the form of more goodness.
Mm-hmm.
They put it on the fourth level, and then the fifth level is in Shiva.
Yeah.
And even in Shaktas, there are like those better modes, mode of, you can say mode of goodness, because they follow the whole culture. For them, the highest is Lalita, really. All this Lalita Sahasrana chanting, and they accept Krishna is her husband, but he is just there for namesake.
He's just an image.
He's
just
there, but he's
like the queen.
He
has her husband, but he's not the king.
Right. He doesn't have any real power.
What?
Oh, I see.
But she needs to have an husband, and Krishna is her husband, but they agree.
So the position is taken.
Oh, so when they go to Lalita, they mean Lalita and Vrindavan.
Maybe because the scripture should refer to
that. Okay, because generally Lalita means a little girl, like 12-year-old girl, you know, who's very gentle and.
Yeah, they're actually referring to her.
Oh, okay. Yeah, well, it goes back. I mean, when you have the Sahasranama, Radharani, then Lalita is over there.
So then when you go to them, it's like mode of goodness, they tell everything properly, follow the Vedic culture, there is no that tantricism in it.
Yeah, or Rajasic, there's no ghost worship.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, because some get right down.
And they talk from Bhagavad Gita. Instead of other books.
Yeah, well, Tantra has, I think, five levels.
Mm.
So the top would be more sattvic and the lower would be less sattvic. Yes?
You mentioned that in a Christian tradition, there is something, a Joshua Lama, he is the father of the Orthodox Church.
Orthodox meaning the East Orthodox. Okay. So when you say Orthodox, it means... But I'm saying when you say Orthodox, it means East in Christianity. Okay. Okay. You don't have to say the East.
For example, the theologian, he was the most elevated spiritual person. And in his meditation, he understood that God has energy and his energies are everything. But he told that
that's interesting. They get something, but then at some point then they go off, you know. You know, how you say, you know, so because God's a person and he has energies and we're all energies and we're servants of God and all that, therefore we should sit in trees and eat bananas. You know, and scratch under our arms.
It's important
that nowadays
no one can judge them. No one can?
Huh? I couldn't catch.
No one can understand his point of view now.
Oh, really? So in the East Orthodox, they don't understand that. Well, that'd be fun to talk to those guys. Because they can talk. That's the one thing I've noticed. You can talk to East Orthodox. Yeah, they just take it. You can't. It's like I'll be walking down the street in like Calcutta or even sometimes out in some other place, but in Bengal, I'll come up to somebody, start talking to them in Bengali, and asking a question, where's this or where's that, and they'll immediately say back to me, it says, I don't understand English. And I'll say, I'm speaking Bengali. No English. I'm saying all that in Bengali. So it's the same kind of thing. Is that if he's a mystic, no one can understand, so we can't even discuss it. So it's like...
Most everybody, they somehow or other, I don't know why it's so difficult for people, because in Gita, it's explained so nicely, so the God has a transcendental feature,
mm-hmm.
but he is also immanent.
Mm-hmm.
He is within everything.
Mm-hmm.
So if you just match those two, it's a perfect match.
Yeah, yeah.
So he is, you know, he's controlling his energy, he's beyond the energies, but he also enters.
Mm-hmm.
So, but for others outside of Vaishnav's circle, it's really, really, it's got to be this or that.
Mm-hmm.
It can't be both. Somehow or other, it's just not. It's not possible.
Mm-hmm.
So if I've noticed with the students, if you can get across this idea, then Shakti Parinam Vada and you know the Brahman, Paramatma Bhagavan becomes much easier to explain. But before that, it's really difficult. It's really difficult. I think it's 15th chapter of the Gita, isn't it? Somewhere there, by the end of the Gita, it's explained.
Yeah, the technical stuff's in
there. The immanent and the transcendental.
Oh, in the 9th chapter. The 9th chapter. Mm-hmm. Because my mystical friends.
So,
an important thing. I don't think that was one of the 12 things either. In the thematic study, I don't think that was one of them. Sorry. Srila Prabhupada elucidates in C.C. Madhya Lila 6.135 as follows. Although there is other evidence, the evidence given in the Vedic version must be taken as foremost. Vedic versions understood directly are first-class evidence. Purport. Works that should be consulted are Srila Jiva Goswami's Tattva Sandarbha 10 and 11, Srila Baladeva Vidyabhushan's commentary on that, and the following verses of the Brahma Sutra, Shastra Yoni Tvat, verse 113. Oh, what did I say?
What?
Oh, yeah. Vedanta Sutra, yeah. Well, because I'm not used to this big letter, small letter thing. Tarka Pratishthanat. Oh, okay. Not Vaishnava Samhita. Vedanta Sutra 2.1.11. And Shutestu Shabda Mulatvat. Vedanta Sutra 2.1.27. As commented upon by Sri Ramanujacharya, Sri Madhvacharya, Sri Nimbakacharya, and Sri Baladeva Vidyabhushan. Okay, so there's some good source material, right? In his book Sarva Sambhadani, Srila Jiva Goswami has noted that although there are 10 kinds of evidence, direct perception, the Vedic version, historical reference, hypothesis, and so on, and although they are all generally accepted as evidence, the person presenting a hypothesis, reading the Vedic version, perceiving or interpreting by his experience is certainly to be imperfect in four ways. That is, he is subject to committing mistakes, to becoming illusioned, to cheating, and having imperfect senses. Although the evidence may be correct, the person himself is in danger of being misled due to his material defects. Apart from the direct presentation, there's a chance that an interpretation may not be perfect. Therefore, the conclusion that only a direct presentation can be considered evidence. An interpretation cannot be accepted as evidence, but can be considered proof of evidence. Right? So other things can be proof of the evidence. So the evidence is the Shastra. Right? Then others can be used to show that, to make it clear for us, to bring about that understanding. But it can't be seen as that they are evidence on their own.
It's not a direct evidence.
No, it's not a direct. It's a secondary that's in support of the direct.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.